Oh, my name is Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic. I just take my marching orders. I'm just here. It has been a wonderful weekend with you guys, and we want to thank you for the opportunity to come spend some time with you. I think at this time we got one more opportunity with Ken up here. Ken's got to leave after this session, so
I'll be here for a little bit of the next one.
Okay, so Ken is going to stay a little bit for the next one. Next one will be Q&A, and so this one, I think we stopped last night. We were doing we did some talk about amends, and then of course Sid put a bow on it. And so this morning we're going to do some talking about the rest of the steps, but I kind of want, while we have Ken here too, to just to discuss and talk about just what this way of life has brought to each one of us, because it is a way of life. And so I'm going to talk just a bit, and talking about 10, 11, and 12 will allow us to do that very same thing, because for many people, after going through the first 9 steps, you know, that's pretty much, you know, where we live, you know. Tarek always knocks me for a loop. You know, because my sponsor, but you know what, I told you guys, I'm a guy that gets his uniform dirty. I came to you a scared little boy playing to being a man. I was 33 years old chronologically, and I had achieved some stuff. I was working in management at a company, and had done some of those kinds of things. And to be honest, because of the nature of our fellowship, I found over the years, I spent a lot of time doing what I like to call in AA, this is the first place I landed where folk try to out-bottom each other. And so I was trying to, you know, level my story to that. But as the years have passed, I've become more and more grateful for my starting point. Everybody in here is starting at a different place when they come into recovery. Sometimes we make the mistake of making blanket statements. Even, you know, when we get up here and we talk in front of people and we'll make blanket statements, but it has become increasingly obvious to me that I'm a brother that's lived a pretty charmed life, you know. Sid talked about her background and growing up with a mom vastly different than mine, and growing up with a brother that was doing some things. Man, I ain't had nothing happen to me except the devastation. And some might say, well, that's a lot, the devastation of getting loaded, you know. It can't, when he talked yesterday, he said his sponsor told him, when he said, I had a lot of fun, you know, he's like, well, was it fun for everybody else? And when you hear Kent's story, it talked about coming out to shoot, you know. I'm so damn square, you guys, and I'm such a nerd. You know, I came out to shoot really slow. I did the natural progress. You know, I remember when I first started getting loaded, I was just on the weekends. When I started blowing, snorting, for the youngsters in the room, you know, some of y'all don't know nothing about, you know, about blow and girl, and but anyway, I started snorting, and it would be me and my older brother. We cop a G on Friday, and we would do about half a G playing backgammon and drinking Asti Spumani. And y'all go, that was our ritual. We drink this Asti and we play backgammon and we snorting this blowski, right? And I would take a vial, I would leave with some. And I come back the next Friday with that, because I only snorted with my brother on Fridays. That was our ritual. I think back on those days and I was like, wow. You know, so I really was a square dude coming along. But as when I was at my party last week and I saw my mom and the kind of mom I've been privileged to grow up with, and I saw my brothers and how tight-knit we've been all our life, and I thought about the experiences of my life. I thought about landing in the lap of Alcoholics Anonymous in the place that I landed. I just always get soft landing spots, you guys. It would be, sometimes, you know, I think to myself, what's the purpose and the benefit of sharing some things? Because it doesn't help anybody else. I want to share said. I wish you could have landed in the AA I landed in with Aura and Virginia and Bernard. But it doesn't matter. You landed where you landed. And I believe God planted you where he planted you. You know, I think everybody, and I hope for everybody, that you feel that way about where you ended up. That's really my hope. And so I ended up in a hotbed. And this hotbed landed me. I have a lot of influences, you know. Many of the influences, like I said, with this, came directly with some people that were your spot. So I come out of doing these amends, you guys. Not come out of them. We start doing the 10th step. When you finish that, when you finish your 5th step, we're propelled all the way now up into the rest of the steps. We propel right then up into the, I said do 6 and 7, sit down with my sponsor. I don't do 6 and 7. I overview 6 and 7. They're a lifetime activity, you know, and so I overview 6 and 7 and I talk about that with a sponsor and I start writing 8. And if you're like me and you were in this workshop with these people that were doing this peer pressure kind of thing, it was 12 of us, and I'll be damned if Ronnie's gonna make some amends and show up Sunday and report on them, and I didn't. I'll be damned if strangers gonna get ahead of me. We had that kind of, you know, even though this is a life and death errand and it's real life in real time, for a guy like me that had always played ball, been competitive, peer pressure, and that worked. And so I share that with people. Get a road dog. Get somebody that's as hungry for this thing as you are. When you get somebody that's as hungry for it, there are some aspects of me. This isn't for everybody, but some aspects of me that helped, that assisted. Because a solitary journey is cool, but when you rolling with some people and then you get this other thing going that's innate in me that's kind of competitive, oh, Ken is going to be like, I'm writing my 4th. Oh, shit, I'm writing my 4th, you know. So we had this big book workshop, you guys, and we had 12 people. And we would report back on Sundays. Where are you? What did you do? And later, what that became and what that still becomes in most of you guys' life and in your sponsorship, it becomes this word accountability. And so I didn't know that at the time. And it felt for me, I'm not a guy that work is an appealing word. And I'm good at it. I'm good at working, but just don't label it work. You know, don't label it work, you know. Many years ago, I took a job in a temp job when I first got sober. This had happened before sobriety, but in sobriety, it cemented it. And I took this temp job, and this temp job had me coming in, sticking a time card in one of those deals that you stick time cards. And I was working this job. It was a mindless job, and I was doing this data entry stuff, and I'd look at the clock, and I remember thinking to myself, I will never, ever again in my life go in a job where I have to feel miserable in the morning when I'm getting ready to go to work. I spend too much of my time at work for that. And in grace of God, you guys, I've never done it since. I've always had places where I look forward to my day. I look forward to engaging in the day. Now, that's not something you find here, but that's something that was important for me, because the idea of work, just some old people who remember Dobie Gillis, he would say something, work, you know, the idea of work was just crazy. But I'm a good worker. And in here, when people say, you know, the process, the work, the rest, sometimes I cringe at that. This journey for me has been amazing. You know what? I'm gonna make a left turn. I'm gonna take a left turn right here. I don't know if Kent's gonna go with me. On this journey, you guys, I've had, since I'm talking about things, I've had three major valleys in recovery. I've hit potholes. Now, you've heard from these three people, and you know, we ain't doing false modesty. We've been on this path a long time. We've been doing this for a long time. We've been living it for a long time. And each one of the three of us had the ability to communicate it. Doesn't make it different or better than anybody else. Some folk don't have the ability to communicate it, but you can certainly live it much better, probably, than at least me and Kent. I don't know if you can get what's said. You can live it much better, you know. You can live it much better than all three of us. When Bill Wilson used to get jammed up all the time, because people would be jamming him all the time, I love his responses to the letters. Because Bill would never come out like, how you stepping to me? You know what? I was the first person up in this piece. How you gonna talk shit? How you gonna talk shit to me? Which would be my inclination. But Bill would always come back with, you know what? You might be right. You might be right. I've stumbled a lot. I've had a lot of challenges. And I like to take it, because you know what? When you come at me, you might be right. You might be right. When I was 22 years sober, my third major valley, 22 years sober, and as a result of some decisions based on self that later put me in position to be hurt, I found a 20-year marriage in Alcoholics Anonymous crumbling. I found myself on the side of the proverbial road that I told you guys about, crashed in a ditch. You know, I'm 22 years sober. I'm speaking at a conference, the State Line Conference. I'm doing a talk on step three, and I'm up in my room, changing my clothes to get ready to go downstairs and talk. It's December. It's before Christmas. And we have big Christmas, and I'm broke. This is a bleak-looking Christmas. If they take you to my house, you already know I'm in bad financial condition. And I'm not fighting for the house because the marriage is crumbling. So I get a call from my wife at that time, and I'm getting ready to go downstairs, and she says, they just put a note on the house. We gotta be out of here. So I'm going to talk about deciding to turn my will and my life over to the care of God and then taking my house. What a perfect opportunity to talk about step three. What a perfect opportunity. It didn't feel good in my life. Right? It was real dark. I get home and I don't tell this story that often because I don't want to give a false idea of alcoholism. But what I do, you guys, is whatever is front burner with me comes out of my mouth. So I was doing this talk on step three, and that was front burner. And that came out. What Christmas was going to look like this year, what my life moving forward was going to look like, the uncertainty and the fear, but I'm not letting go of your hand, God. You know, my choice is not to blame, and whatever it is, my choice is I'm gonna get on the phone and I'm gonna call. I got a power. And you know, I remember 21-year-old Ralph walking around in the dark, wondering what to do, you know, panicking and tripping, you know. And I remember 22-year-old River with a daddy, you know, and I said, I know what I'm gonna do. I'm broke down. I'm gonna call I got a power that I know is going to do for me. And so I get home and I do that talk and I'm, you know, here's the part I don't share and I'm gonna share it. So we at the State Line Retreat, and the State Line Retreat at that time sold out at 700 people. And I'm in my room and somebody knocks on the door and they give me an envelope. And my fellowship, this is not, I don't like sharing it because sometimes people think, oh, we get to the podium, we share our woes, and then, you know, take care, you know. But I think just the sincerity, and they stepped up, and my babies had Christmas. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, that's an episode, but this marriage crumbling and this house losing and the 3 years to ensue was a process. And I was broke for 3 years. I didn't have a deal at all. And in that 3 year period, I remember parking my car. Remember one of my earliest vows, you guys? I'm gonna be a daddy. And I'm gonna have a nuclear family, and my family's gonna always be together, and my girls are never gonna sleep under another roof. And I was so proud of that. I was so proud. When we would go to parent-teacher conferences, it would be me and my wife. River would have mama and daddy. River ran with that mama. And it was, and I sat on the side of, thank God I had, my daughter has great godparents in the fellowship, two of my closest friends. And I remember the day I dropped her off at her godparents' house. And she had her little suitcase. And she went into the house, and I walked up into the house with her, and I went outside. And I was sitting in my car, and she was standing in the doorway, looking out, waving. Whew. 22 years sober, I'm a failure. What happened? When I lost my marriage smoking, I knew why. What the hell am I doing losing a marriage sober? 22 years, speaking, sponsoring, doing this. What the hell part of the game is this? I didn't sign up for this, you know. I felt stupid. I felt like they needed a recovery home for old timers. You know, I need to be up here. You know. And they damn near did, because I now know where to stay. You know. I'm not going to my mom's house, and my boy, oh man, you guys in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I'm in. I'm not on the periphery. You know, when things go bad in your life in Alcoholics Anonymous, lean in. Sometime the inclination, Sydney was talking about treating loneliness with isolation. You know, and the inclination when times get hard is, you know, pull back, curl up, you know, and lean in. When things get good in Alcoholics Anonymous, get in. Don't let the life that AA gave you get in the way of your AA life. When stuff gets good, you know the inclination is to go make money, to go do this. I can't make it to a meeting. I got to get this. I got to hit these, you know, get in. But when things get hard, lean in. I'm telling you. You know, one of the reasons why, you know, it is so important to be in this deal. And I talk about all three sides. Sometimes when you start getting into this part, you discount and minimize that fellowship part. Here's a brother that's going to share to you from firsthand experience, 3 years. Now, I am sure that having a program of recovery, which gave me a power and a connection to a power, I am sure that is what sustained me. But what it was that I could put my finger every single, was you guys, was you. There will be times in that 3 year period, you guys, that I had to go to a 7 o'clock meeting every morning. And the reason I went to a 7 o'clock meeting every morning was if I didn't get up and go to a 7 o'clock meeting, I might've stayed in bed all day. And I might've got in the habit. My sponsor said, you need to get your ass in the habit of getting up like you going to work. I got my confidence shattered at that time, you guys. I've always been a guy that can work. I've always been a guy that can get jobs. I've always been a guy that can have jobs and hold jobs. I went on temp positions at these law firms twice. Let me go after a week. I don't know if it was, and I know I performed whatever it was. Usually I had taken temp positions before and turned them into permanent. Let me go after a week. Confidence shattered. You know, I'm in every area except showing up at home group, showing up on Sunday mornings, and showing up in sponsorship. That power of sponsorship, it is huge. Power of sponsorship and being sponsored. Not having a sponsor, being sponsored. Two different things. And that it's powerful. It is. If you ain't sponsoring yet, and I'm not throwing this out as an advertisement nor as an indictment, I'm just throwing it out as my experience. You know, it is, it helped me because a guy like me, brother, you know, a guy like me, I don't like admitting it and I don't like saying it, man, but to feel useful and to have purpose. And I didn't see it anywhere else. My daughter was at her godparents. I was picking her up every morning, taking her to school. And I would tell you, and then I'd take her back there. You know, I felt like a failure as a dad, as a husband, as a worker. And so, Ralph, what was going on at this time? I got knee deep in alcoholism. I threw myself more and in the sponsorship. Check this out. My sponsees never looked at me sideways. My sponsees never looked at me like I had failed them. My sponsees never stopped calling with mundane shit. Spons. Spons, let me tell her what she did. Let me tell you what she did. Oh, okay. And you know, and you guys, sometimes when you see your sponsor in it and going through it, and seeming to be overwhelmed, the inclination, and it's comes from a good place too, is, oh, I'm not gonna bother them. I can't bother them. They got serious stuff going on. They got health issues going on. They got mom issues going on. He's in the middle of a divorce. Please don't leave us out there. Please don't leave. Even when it seemed like we feel like we being bothered, we don't know. Till we answer the phone. I was thinking, I don't want to take these calls. And when I took them, life saver. It reminded me, A, who I am. It reminded me, B, primary purpose. It reminded me, C, that Ralph, no matter what you, and the other thing with sponsors, they have some shit too that'll make your shit look like, oh, okay, I can do this. You know? So I went through that period, you guys. And so, Ralph, what ended up happening in that period? I would go to meetings some days. Like I told you guys, I'd go at 7 in the morning. I needed to get in the routine of getting up to start my day. At the end of my day sometimes, you guys, all I had on my resume for that day was at least I went to a meeting. Seemingly, that's all I had, you know. You don't grade your paper when you're in the classroom. You don't learn the lesson in the classroom. Looking back, I can see that there was a whole lot more that took place, but when I was in it, it felt like that is all I had to report for the day. And so I started going through with my boy, Leon Strange, you know, knew I was on somebody else's couch. Strange had been on my couch some years before. Had been in my room, I had another room, and I'm like, you my boy, your money ain't good here. He was ass out. His thing, he had had a marriage crumble. He was ass, it's amazing to see how this thing is, you know, and to have real friends, you know. Like I say, I'm a brother that's blessed. I don't know this is everybody's story, you know, but that brother called me and said, Ralph, come on, and your money's no good. Which was good, because I didn't have no money to be no good. Yeah. Your money's no good. I ain't got no money, you know. And so I remember during that period, I was over in the UK doing a thing like this, and I was sitting with a sponsee, and I could look at things one or two ways. I had $32 in my pocket over there in the UK, And that was my entire net worth. That was the entire, that was not, oh, he brought $32 and he got money in the bank or he got a 401k. No, that was my net worth. Kent wasn't worth a quarter when he was getting loaded. I was worth $32 when I was 22 years sober, right? And so we in the UK, and you could look at it one of two ways. You could look at it like, God damn, what the hell are you trying to do over here and all you got is, or you could look at it like, what a wonderful program. It has allowed me to travel the world. I have no money, but I'm rich. But I'm rich. It's priceless. And you kick up your feet and you keep it goddamn moving. You know, it ain't always bells and whistles up in here, but the thing that I've gotten as a result of being a participating member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is I goddamn walk. You know, I don't do a lot of things perfectly. And if I would grade my paper, T says, you know, I don't, but I'm going to grade my own paper this one time for you guys. And only in one subject, I've messed up a whole lot of things, you know, but there's one place that I would give myself a passing grade. In fact, I give myself flying colors. On page 100, it talks about, it's one of my favorite parts in there, both you and the new man, and that part is not the one. If you persist, I persist. God damn it, I persist. I walk. IRS came after me for $80,000. I'm still here. Loss of marriage at 22 years sober, I'm still here, you know. My kids had to go move out the house. God damn it, I'm still here. I went 3 years without a job. I'm not leaving Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've had things go on in my, no, I got to go sleep on people's couches. I'm not taking my hand out of your hand. I got on my knees and 18 months sober, and I made a commitment, and I ain't backed up on it. Some people say I'll be taking my will back. The way I look at that third step and that will in my life, I look at it like God's got a real big house, and Ralph is in his house, and he gives Ralph his own room, and that house. Sometimes I go up in my room and I throw tantrum, but I ain't leaving your house, goddammit. Daddy, I'm up in the house. It's like one of them kids you be trying to put them out when they be showing their ass. Ain't you glad God don't put you out when you show your ass? Because I be showing my ass all the time. I be talking shit. I be throwing tantrums. I be, this ain't fair. What part of the game is this? But I ain't leaving your house, Dad. I know. I know where I'm playing it. I know. You know, my daughters are like that. Ain't it a wonderful thing? You know, I've created an environment and an atmosphere where my daughters know like they know like they know that if it's anything we know in this world, if my old man, if my boyfriend or if my husband hurts, if the world comes at me, I can run to Daddy. And imagine, that's just a microcosm of this power we have. Like I say, I'm just using it, but I ain't leaving your house. I'm not leaving. And that's the way I look at it. Folk be talking about taking their will. And I, you know, yeah, God ain't tripping off that. You know, but God ain't tripping that I be like, man, this is some bullshit. I say that to God all the time. Like, why he ain't tripping? He know it is too. Yeah, I know. I know, Ralph. I know. But I got you. But I got you. My daughters be calling me, man, this is, I be like, yeah, baby, I know. You know, because that ain't of God. That's of the world. You know, he giving people free will. Man, I gave you the playground. All my kids are out there. Some bad kids on the playground. I got you. It's some bad shit that happens on the playground. I got you. The only thing I want, because I'm thirsty for you, dude. You thinking it's hard terms? No, that's the kids on the playground making hard terms. You can do whatever you want up in this piece. You can throw shit. You can kick and scream. You know, I got you. And the thing, you know, and I know it's a lot of people in here that have said things that have come out of my mouth. You know, when you knew on the path, you'd be like, man, it's quality. It ain't quantity. It's about them old timers. It's quality. And of course, that's all you got. You got to say that when you ain't got quantity. Shit. I said it. Shit, I said, you know, because I'm arrogant like that. And you can't see. You really ain't you not being this, you just can't see. When you a 16-year-old teenager and them old folk be telling you, they just hating, they trying to keep me down. Damn, they ain't knowing. You can't see. You ain't been 40. They been 16. You don't know that. Then when you get to be 40, you be like, damn, I was like that. Same thing in recovery, you know? And so the thing we sharing about, I'm talking about things I know, you guys. I'm talking about things I know. I'm not speculating that God is everything and he is nothing. I've had some everything moments. I used to say it and thought I knew. But when you get your ass out, no money, no free, no, as Clancy used to say, no friendly direction, no thing to do, and you, okay, God, you better be everything because I ain't got nothing else. I got nothing. And guess what, guys? He's been everything. He's been everything. I came out the other side of that. And I get armed with what it is that's our most valuable lesson, you know, our most valuable commodity, experience. Having experience is fine. Getting experience hurts. Somebody in here is just getting experience. And it'll make you the most useful. And if you're getting some serious experience, Thich called it great suffering last night leads to great freedom. If you're getting serious experience, that means you're going to be able to help a gang of people. You're going to be able to help a gang of people. The IRS has come at me. You know, I've lost a marriage. You know, I've had job stuff go on. I've had extramarital shit to go on. I've had the gamut. I can be helped. So God got a lot that he can do with your boy. You know what I'm saying? And it ain't because he's smart. It ain't because he's bright. It ain't because he's deep. It ain't because he's insightful. It ain't because all that. It's because he messy. He get raggedy sometimes. But you know what else he is? He's present. He's here. He ain't scared. He's useful. He's available. And that's the last thing I'm gonna say before I turn this thing over to Kent. You know, sometimes don't get intimidated, right? Don't get intimidated. We can turn a phrase. All three of us here can turn a phrase. All three of us here have some things that'll make you say, damn, I never thought of it. And it can be a little intimidating. For some folk, if you like me, it can be, let me see if I can top that. And it'll be one of those deals where I think that is how recovery is measured. Don't fall in that. Don't fall into that. You know what I'm saying? No, don't bite. It ain't trying to be deep. It ain't trying to be heavy. It ain't trying to be none of that. You know, but for other people, and I didn't realize that. You know, at my workshop, we have a lot of people sharing. It's really insightful and it's real, but it gets intimidating for some people. Guess what? This program, Alcoholics, it ain't one size fits all. It's tailor-made for you. And as Sid said last night, I used to think Alcoholics Anonymous don't need you. You know, I need it, but I am with you, Sid. We need you. You the only voice that sounds like your voice. Sometimes you'll be the only voice somebody can hear. You'll be the only face put in front of somebody. When I got on my knees, I signed up for the duty. I said, okay, God, I agree. I will be your agent. I will be your flyer. Folk can't see you. Folk can't see the wind, but they can see the trees moving, you know. Folk can't see you with a face, but they can see you with a face. They saw me running, ripping and running and doing the kind of shit, and they see me now. Folk see me. My deportment shouts loud. We gotta be up here. And the last thing, you know, it's available, you guys. It's available. I talk to Tarek all the time because Tarek is a guy. Tarek stretches me and he just, and Tarek can wax really deep. Sometimes I'd be like, what the hell is that, T? You know, because he'd be giving these books out, like, he'd be, you know, and you'd be the Tao and the this and that. And he, but Tarek's heart is way bigger than his intellect. And Tarek got big intellect, you know. But I'm going to tell you where you can't go wrong. Lead with your heart. This program, when it gets distilled into its lowest common denominator, it's about love and it's about service. It really is. It's about love and it's about service. I'm 70 years old. I'm not talking about now in recovery years. I'm talking about a grown-ass man being on this planet a long time. And I've seen a couple of things, you guys. And at the end of the day, all that other bullshit just go to this. It's about love and it's about service. Okay? I was supposed to talk on what I talked on, shit. You know, go on, Kent. Do what you do.
Kent Coleman, alcoholic. I just want to say real quick to Terry, to this committee, thank you. A lot of times we, you lack the words almost. My grandmother taught me two words and they were thank you. I was raised right. I always say if my mother was here, she'd stand up in the back and say, you ain't turned out right. But anyway, I never want to not say thank you for your kindness, your hospitality, for the opportunity to participate. I do not take it for granted. These kinds of weekends, and I've been going on them ever since I was new. A guy came up to me at the club at home. His name was Dan. Dan was 15 years sober. And he was the head counselor at the hospital treatment center, which was a big one where I lived at. And on the day that I came to the club for the first time, and I was one day out of treatment, that day he quit his job. He was tired of it. He wanted to get back to AA, and he just felt like he was lost. And he came to that meeting that morning, and I opened my mouth and said something, and he said, my God, I thought I just left this. And and what Dan started to do is Dan started to follow me around. He started to follow me around. And I couldn't for the life of me figure out how does he always know where I'm going to be? Because every morning, he would say, where are you going tonight, Kent? And I would tell him. And then he would show up there. And he knew me. And what he did is he followed me around for the first 3 months when I was losing my mind. And he helped me. He helped me. And he came up to me one day and he said, do you trust me? And I said, yeah. He said, okay, pack a bag, be down here Friday morning. We're going on a retreat. I didn't even know what a retreat was. And see, they set the bar high. I get so caught up in Kent and all the stuff I got going on. Sometimes I look back and I look at, Ralph, talk about where you land at. So I've been going to these for a long time, and they kind of reverberate later. Things that I heard like will come back later. I would always go home like juiced up, right? And I would share that with other new people because that's all I talked to. And So if you've been here this weekend, you know, take it home and share it with those who were not able to be here. I landed in a place where I was supposed to land. No, Tarek was up here passing out these books. He said something about Snyder. Both of my sponsors knew Snyder well. AA, as you know it, what it looks like, what your meetings look like, all of that, that was Snyder. That was Snyder. What your meeting formats look like, I could take you to Cleveland and take you out to Willoughby and I'll show you a meeting where they actually, it looks exactly like they did then. They've never changed it. These are the first AA meetings ever. And but as you know it today, sponsorship, as you know it today, Snyder. Dr. Bud, there was less than 100 people when the explosion happened in Cleveland. And Dr. Bob and Bill said, we have no experience with what's going on in Cleveland. We're just going to watch. New York had a handful of people. Akron had a handful. Snyder was getting hundreds. Personal sponsorship started then. They took people through as a group, and then after that, they said, okay, the next group come in, everybody get one. That's how it started. So what you know as now, yeah, that was him. And I came up around those kind of people. You know, I've heard over the years that, you know, like we didn't have no big book till Charlie and Joe, and not where I came from. Where I came from, we never heard of Charlie and Joe. I knew Charlie and Joe personally before I ever heard their tapes. I knew them personally. I'd never heard those things. Where I came from, you could not escape this. You could do like I did my first 3 months and act like you didn't see it and hear it, but you couldn't escape it. The book was on the table everywhere you went. That's all they talked about. There were big book studies everywhere, and they were done by people who were sober a long time. Some of the best big book shares, presenters I ever heard, you'll never hear because they're dead now, but they were where I lived at. And that's where I came up. I do a Zoom meeting with my sponsees on Tuesday. And we started it during COVID. And I sponsor a lot of people pretty much like coast to coast. And I thought it would be pretty cool because they didn't know each other, right? And so I thought, well, you know, we can't nobody go out. We can't do nothing. We might as well. And it has changed my recovery. It has changed my sponsorship. It has changed. I can't even... I mean, I'm a guy who thinks he knows things he don't know. So I done already decided what's going to come out of this, right? And it's going to give us something to do, right? And I tell you, a lot of the gist of what we do is based on this. What do I do versus what I know and what I say? It is extremely easy for me. Because I know the book, I know what's in it. If somebody come ask me, oh yes, or I'm at a discussion meeting, yes, you know, the program teaches us. Do I do that? I sponsor a lot of people that are sober over 25 years. And what we started asking ourselves on Tuesday night is how much of this do we actually do as opposed to what we know and say? And we got down to some nitty gritty. And what happened is there was a trust that developed between a love that developed between us on Tuesday night where there is no barriers. And people started telling the truth. And we started to do things. We started to challenge. Ralph said, get a road dog, right? You go, you run around. And I did that when I was new. His name was John B. But we started to challenge ourselves. And I can't speak for anybody else on it, but I could tell you this. I've watched the change occur. I watched it. You listen. I'm listening to dude what Rel said about Tarek. I listen to cats share in this meeting, and I'm like, damn, is that so-and-so? Right. How much of this do I do as opposed to what I know about it and say about it? I can say for myself personally, boy, did I find a lot of room to grow. What it looked like in here, Ralph said he was gonna take a left turn. I don't know if Kent gonna follow me. I'm gonna follow him for a minute. I went through a thing at work, Ralph will remember this. I was EAP for the union after I got sober. EAP in a automotive facility is an internationally appointed job. Paid a lot of money. It's not just alcohol and drugs, it's mental health. Trust me, the things that came through my door in that facility of 3,000 people, you can imagine. I would say it was more, oh God, family problems. I would have people come in and say things like, Ralph has been talking to himself, and he's not taking baths, and he seems very angry, and we're afraid. And, you know, I have been in that plant for a long time, so I will come down to see Ralph. And I'd say, Ralph, how you doing, man? I'm all right. Why don't you come up and see me, man? I got this job. Now come up and see me. I just like to talk to you, you know. So I get him in there, and we start talking. And sometimes it would be substance abuse related, sometimes not, right? And then I loved that job. I did. I really did. I loved that job. And through a series of circumstances, the guy who I replaced, he had had a heart attack. And when he got stable, he said, I'm retiring, get Kent appointed. He was a member of this fellowship. And then after he got well, for his own personal reasons, he decided he didn't want to be at home and he wanted to come back. Well, you can't do that, right? Well, here's what happens. When you got 40 years of seniority and I had 20, you can come back. And I was turned inside out. I really was. I got really, really dark. I got really, really dark, and I started thinking stuff that I had not stopped, not about drinking. But I started thinking stuff the way that I used to think about stuff, and I was in a lot of trouble. And I decided after all this went down and he came back that I was just gonna go back and work on the line and go back to school. And I did. And I got a master's degree in business administration. And I had a build-up job. I got done at 11 o'clock in the morning. And after I got done, instead of going home like a lot of people do, I stayed in the plant like you're supposed to. And I would write papers, right, do stuff, right, give myself a little head start. And a manager walked by me one day, and he said, Coleman, what you doing? And I said, I'm in the MBA program at Ashland University. I'm working on a paper. He said, I knew you had a degree. He said, I didn't know you was doing all that. He said, why don't you come see me? Okay. So I went down to see him. He said, look, he said, things ain't looking good at Ford. This is, I don't know what year it was. It was in the early 2000s. But he said, I tell you what, he said, I need a supervisor for 3 months to cover vacations. He said, if things go down the tubes, it'll look good on your resume. And, you know, you could. So I, you know, I talked to some people. Now, I had been an internationally appointed union official. So I went and talked to my father, who was a union big shot at General Motors. And my father said, you know, you need to do what you think you need to do. He said, I ain't going to tell you what to do or what not to do. And so I prayed about it, and so I did it. And after 1 month, they called me up front. And of course, when they called me to come up there, my thought was, okay, I failed. Because that's how my mind worked. You know, hell, at least I tried. Right? So I go walking in there, and they got all these, you know, people sitting in there, the plant manager and the HR people and all that. And the guy that was ahead of salary personnel, his name was Gary Cook. Gary Cook looked at me and said, we're going to cut to the chase, son. He said, you've been doing this for a month, and it seemed to us like you've been doing this your entire life. We don't want you for 3 months. We want you for good. And he put a piece of paper in front of me, and he said, here's what we're going to pay you. And I looked at the paper, and I said, give me a pen. And it is amazing. Listen, my life was over 2 months ago. I'm seriously thinking about harming people, right? So then I became a supervisor, and then a couple years later, I became the paint coordinator for the Econoline vans worldwide, and then I went to Dearborn, and I retired out of Dearborn. What I would say to you is this. The one thing that never changed through this was I never was inconsistent here, ever. I have never been inconsistent here. I have continued to go to meetings, to sponsor people, to say yes to Alcoholics Anonymous. Say yes. 20 years sober, I went through what Ralph did. I had a marriage that was in AA. Somebody I met in AA, we got married. I was about 2.5 years sober, almost 3. And at 20, it was over. That day, I called my sponsor. The second person I called was Ralph. And, okay. So the upshoot of the whole thing was, you know, and I said, you know how we do. Why me? And my sponsor said, why not you? No, he said, sobriety is not immunity from the vicissitudes of life. People are going to live, people are going to die, people are going to get married, people are going to get divorced. Life going to be life. But you have this power, Kent. Okay. And so let's just keep doing what we're doing. So what ended up happening? We was in the process. I was putting a conference together in Akron called the Akron Homecoming. And Bob D in Las Vegas was helping me with it. And let me show you how God worked. I knew Bob from being out doing this, right? I had known Bob for a while. My sponsor, Bill, was extremely sick at this point. And I don't really feel like doing this conference. We had people coming from all over the world for this thing. It's called the Akron Homecoming. We called everybody home to Akron, and they came, trust me. Most beautiful, wonderful lineup of speakers I ever seen in my life. And, you know, certain people you call, you can't get, right? Unless you call them like 2 years early, right? Every single person I called said, I got that open. It was crazy. So we did this conference the day after the conference, that Monday. So I had decided to go. I had a cousin, first cousin, stay with me for a minute. And she lived in Las Vegas. It was my mother's twin sister's daughter. And they were raised like my sisters. There was three, in our family, we had 3 boys. My mother had a twin sister, had 2 girls. So they was raised like our sisters. Darlene and Faye was my sisters. And I called Darlene in Vegas. She went out there in the 70s because she had rheumatoid arthritis, and they told her she needed to go to the desert. So she'd been out there for a while. And I called her, and I was telling her what was going on, and she said, Kenny, why don't you come out here? And my kids was little, right? And I'm like, Darlene, I can't come to Las Vegas. She said, why don't you pray about it? And I said, Well, I don't have a job in Las Vegas. She said, have you applied for any? You know, I can't stand these people with common sense, right? They just like, what ended up happening, this is a true story. I came home from work at 5 o'clock and I sent a resume to a place I seen in, you know, Indeed in Las Vegas. It was a position, it was something that I do, right? Purchasing, that's what I do, I'm a buyer now. And this was at 5 o'clock Eastern time. So it'd been 2 o'clock out there. So I'm with my youngest daughter, we watching TV. At 5:20, 20 minutes later, my phone started buzzing. My daughter looked at it and said, Daddy, it say Las Vegas. So I answered the phone. And the guy introduced himself, told me what company he was coming. He said, are you serious? He said, dude, we don't have people like you out here. He said, are you serious? I said, yeah. So I sent three more, all of them called me. So I arranged a trip out there. I went, I interviewed at all of them. I picked one. And so I decided to go. My deal with my daughters was, we'll try this. Y'all will come out in the summertime, right? Come on, we'll see how this works. I said, this is not permanent. If it don't work for me and it don't work for you, I will come back. So I'm out there for a while. They came out, they had fun, right? I'm still struggling with it because I'm missing stuff. I'm not in Ohio, I'm missing stuff. When I got to Las Vegas, I was 20 years sober. I didn't need nobody to tell me what to do. The first thing I did is I went down to the Serenity Club to the young people's meeting on Wednesday night, hunting, right? And within 2 weeks, I had 5 guys. I joined the home group that Bob became my sponsor. I joined that home group. It's called Connect the Dots. And I joined Connect the Dots. They immediately gave me a commitment. So now I got a home group. I got a commitment. I got sponsees. Are y'all following me? I just kept my feet moving. What was going on inside of me and what was going on inside my head, what it was, but I kept my feet moving. I stayed busy in here. I had, the first month I was in Las Vegas, I had 2 speaking engagements in Ohio that was made when I was living in Ohio that I would have driven to. They both said, we'll fly you from Vegas. I told Bob, I said, look, dude, I said, I got like, in the next 3 months, I got 9 conferences to speak at. I said, I think we need to cancel some of this. And he said, well, what are you gonna do? Sit over in that condo and think? Bob goes, I don't think we're gonna cancel anything. So a week after I went to Vegas, I was back in Ohio. And then like 2 weeks later, I was back again. I did the intergroup thing in Dayton, and then I did this thing on the riverboat on the Ohio River, and I came back for that. I did some work, and I'm gonna get into detail, but I did some work with Bob D. that changed my life. We sat in his living room, I wrote inventory. And Bob took me someplace I had never been. And it changed my life. I kept asking God, thy will be done as far as where I live at, thy will be done. And what happened was I had to fly to Indiana for the company that I worked for, and I was only 2 hours from where I live. So I went to see my kids. Now this is about over a year into this thing. And my youngest daughter's Jordan. Jordan is daddy's girl. I had this rental car. And so when it was time for me to go, because I had to go back to Fort Wayne, I think it was, somewhere to the airport, I came and I got in the car, and Jordan stood in the garage, in the doorway of the garage, and she waved at me. And I seen the look on her face. And right then, I knew it was time for Daddy to come home. And Daddy came home. Took a minute, but I came home. Financial problems, marital problems. Me and Ralph talked a whole bunch of time. We were both broke. Because I came out this divorce with nothing. And it wasn't like, it was not even a contentious thing. I gave it because I wanted it for my kids. I had nothing. We'd be talking about, you know, we get ready to go out flying this weekend. I'm like, man, I got $17. Right? Like I'm hoping, you know, like, don't none have, you know. It's crazy how you look back at that. And it's like, everything was fine. Had everything. Had everything I needed. Everything was fine. I kept saying yes to AA. Everything was fine. My problems lie up here. They lie up here. The problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. It's all up here. And it's all what? Ralph said it yesterday, self-centered fear. What's going to happen to me? God, like, I got you. I've always had you. As the progression of recovery has gone on in my life, like, I've realized how much problems I cause for myself with my thinking. I have got to stay in the day I'm in. Sydney said it last night. God is only here now. I only live now. What am I worrying about 2 weeks for? And one of the things that I realized was that, like, in morning meditation, it came to me one day, like, I had some financial stuff going on, I think, and it came to me very clearly. You have what you need. You've always had it. Right? Like, check this out. What do I do with it? Because I realized right then, like, dang, if I was to put numbers on, I got more than enough. I got more than enough. And I haven't really had any issues with that. And maybe I will again. Who knows? But I have this faith and trust in this power. It is no longer, Ralph just said it, it's not theory, it's experience. And if I stay here long enough, life gonna show up. And God will be right there. I'm not sitting here telling you something can happen tomorrow. I wouldn't be freaking out. I'm human, but I'm going to stay with y'all. I'm going to stay with y'all because it has never failed me. God, I've said this a million times. There was an old timer in our group, John C. John came in 45. John started treatment for alcoholism in Northwest Ohio because he was the longest sober member they could find. And somebody called him from Toledo and said, we need to start, this was sometime in the probably early 60s maybe. And they said, we need to start some kind of treatment, right? John said, I don't know nothing about that. I'm a salesman. And the dude said, well, we need some help, right? So John, with a folding card table and two chairs and a big book on that table, started treatment in Northwest Ohio, Toledo, up in Detroit, all that. I just thought John was an old man. He don't know nothing, right? And John was an amazing human being. And I said to John one night, he was in my home group, and I said, John, hey man, like, have you ever seen this fail? And he said, no. He said, Kent, there's no failure here. He said, there's no failure here. He said, I'm going to tell you why. He said, because God doesn't fail. He said, if this don't work, he said, obviously, you didn't follow the directions. Simple words from simple men. Simple words from simple men. It's great to come to weekends like this, and there's a lot of information get disseminated and all that, and I used to do that. And then I would memorize stuff, and then I would go to meetings because I was in that crusader phase, right? Like, I'm waiting for somebody to pounce on. Somebody gonna say something wrong up in here. Somebody getting ready to contradict this great program. And as soon as you do,
right?
There was a guy in my town, Toupee Bob. We had them kind of names, right? Toupee Bob, right? And Toupee Bob was first three steps and you don't need nothing else and all this big book stuff and all, he would go off. And I'd be there to meet him. And he did it down at the 1 o'clock Sunshine Group one day and I unleashed on him. A guy named Rick Pacman said to me after the meeting, he said, Kent, he said, if he don't go get drunk after that, he said, I won't believe it. He said, you just took his spine out in front of 40 people. I hitched up my pants. Yes, sir. AA has been defended here this here day. So that afternoon when I made my call to my sponsor, remember I had to call him for 12 years. This time I'm only sober about three or whatever, you know. So I told him, I said, I had a straighten toupee out today. And he said, you had to straighten? And so, you know, he said, what did you do? So I told him. He said, let me tell you something, hot shot. He said, the things that we learn here are tools that we use to assist others. They're not weapons that we use to attack them. He said, you're going to make amends to that man. And he says, you're never going to do this again. He said, you know something? You know so much. He said, I knew him when he got here. He said, I knew the people who worked with him. He said, they didn't have much. He said, but they gave him what they had. He said, what you've done is you've created separation between him and you. So now, if he needs you, he won't ask you. He said, you do that enough. He said, you're going to find yourself out of here. So I made amends to that man. And later, after I had retired from Ford, I became the residential director of Stella Maris, which is the second oldest treatment center in the world. It's on Skid Row in Cleveland. It was down on West 25th Street. It was started by Clarence Snyder and the original AAs. 40-bed dormitory, 30 beds, either county paid or self-paid or insurance, and had 10 VA beds. Had an auditorium, Ralph Benestella's. Auditorium, beautiful, seat 250. Coffee shop nicer than Starbucks, 25-bed detox, dude. Ooh-wee. My sponsor, Bill Finley, started the Compass House. I was raised following him around, watching him. When they asked me to come to Stella's, I called Bill. I said, they asked me to come to Stella's. He said, good. He said, you would be needed there. And I said, what do I do? And he said, you already know. Click, and hung up. And so I went down there, and I did the best I could. But what I would tell you is that while I was there, I got a call one day. And the secretary called, and she said, Ken, there's a guy on the phone. I said, who is it? And she said, his name is Bob. So I answered the phone, and it was Bob. Now, when I made amends to him, he didn't even say nothing. He couldn't stand the sight of me, and I don't blame him. But he called me, and he said, listen, Ken, he said, my granddaughter is addicted to heroin, and she's 18 years old, and she's going to die. And he was trying to keep from crying. I said, Bob, I said, don't even blink, baby. Put her in a car. Get her up here right now. I said, I ain't even going to call the detox. If they ain't got a bed, we'll make one. Bring her here now. And he did. And the young lady is still sober and clean today, right? Bob is dead now. He's long gone. I've learned so many things here. We talk about prayer and meditation, and I'll say this about that. There was a guy, actually, I only think Ralph will remember this. I used to have this black bag. This is in the cassette days for you youngsters up in here. And there was a place in Cleveland called the Serenity Shop. And they used to sell AA cassettes. You could buy like a bag of them like this with like 30 of them in it for like $20. And I'd go in there and just get, I had this black shoulder bag. There was probably 400 cassette tapes in that thing. They had the early, there's people who were recorded that AA don't know was recorded. We had that stuff in Ohio. The first 10 men of AA, Sid Retzel, the Stanley Brothers, I had all of them. I worked on the line. We had those Walkmen, they used to call them in them days, right? There was a guy in the plant that made leather Walkmen, like here, you hook them on your belt. Dude was making bank, right? Because everybody was one of those Walkmans, right? And Kent listened to cassettes all day while I'm working. Now I'm going to 20 to 25 meetings a week and 8 hours a day, man. Just over and over. I listened to a guy, his name was Dick Poutney. He's long dead, I'll use his name. Dick Poutney was at one time the director of Stella Maris. I had his chair. That was years later. But I heard Dick Poutney tell this story. Dick Poutney, these dudes was really low bot. This was, his story is one of the worst I've ever heard. His wife should have killed him. Dude would say, I'm going up the street, I'll be back. And he would get on freighters and he'd be gone 3-4 years. And then he'd come back with the same clothes on he left and come up on the porch and she'd start screaming, get away from here. We have food. We have a decent place to stay. They'd be at like her mother's. And he'd say, get my kids and come on. And he'd take them back to a basement somewhere. This cat was pouting. He was Sister Ignatia's whipping boy. Sister Ignatia, when he got a year, she stood up at the meeting when they gave him his medallion and she said, I bet you can't make two. I bet you can't make two. Anyway, Poutney told this story that he left. She got him a job. Sister Nation got him a job at Republic Steel. And he used to have to take a bus, then a trolley car, then a cab to Republic Steel. He walked down 168 steps to get to his job at the steel mill. One day he did that and got to the bottom step and realized that he had not done his reading, prayer, and meditation. Back up the steps, back into the cab, back to the trolley car, back to the bus, back to his house in his 24-hour book. There's a thing in our book that burned the idea into the consciousness. When I heard him say that, it burned something into my consciousness about prayer, meditation, and what we do in the morning. And that little story from Dick Poutney that I heard 30 years ago to this day. Dick Poutney said, I would rather leave the house without my trousers. Than not to pray and meditate. Go through the day and 10, right? God is here, God is now, right? I'm inventorying. And 11 starts at night, retire at night. Our safety net, my sponsor Bob tells that story. If you go to New York, you'll see the skyscrapers and you'll see a series of scaffolding and nets, right? And that's because if somebody drops something from up there, a squeegee or a hammer or something, by the time that thing hits the sidewalk, it's a missile, right? So we want to stop it, right? So at night we review, right? Just to see, because sometimes I will intentionally overlook stuff, right? Oh, they had that coming, right? Or whatever, right? Or sometimes I get so full of me, I just ain't aware. I need to take that quiet time. Because here's the deal, right? Like I ain't dragging yesterday into tomorrow. I want to be clear. Sydney talked about this last. I want to be clear to receive in the morning. I want to be clear. When my sponsees come to me and say, I'm having trouble staying quiet, okay, what's there. See, that's why when I'm new and I got all this stuff in my head and I'm blocked, I can't sit still. I got my head is just right. But as we go through these steps, right, and we start to clear away those things that are obscuring us, blocking us from the sunlight of the Spirit, right? So now on a daily basis in 10, I'm trying to address that stuff so I ain't. And then at night, I'm taking that double check, that safety net to make sure. Because when I awaken in the morning, I want to be able to receive. Am I making sense? Okay? So I want the table to be clear. Right, so that I can get quiet and I can receive. And I also receive from y'all. You know, God worked through people with skin. That's why going to meetings is so important. Sometimes God will speak through y'all to me, right? And I get the answers that I need. What a wonderful way of life. It's exciting to me. It was exciting. My first sponsor before he died, he said, you took the AA like a duck took the water. I said, dude, I was hungry. I was so I used to think there has to be more to life than this. There has to be. How come these people are, I worked with happy people. How come my family was happy people? How can these people all be happy? And I no longer care if I live or die. I had reached that place, indifference. And I believe indifference is as far away from God as a human being with a soul and the promise of life can get. I really do believe that. I no longer cared if I lived or died, or whether you did either. I just don't care. There has to be more to life than this. And then to come in here, identify with you, and see with my own eyes, right, and hear with my own ears, there is a solution. 10 and 11 for me, right? And this has been a big focus of our Tuesday night sponsee meeting, is 10 and 11. It has been a huge focus. How are we paying lip service to it? Are we checking the box, right? What are we doing? And the results of it have been self-evident. It's been amazing. It's been amazing just to take little pockets of stuff, right? And then, okay, let's do this. Let's work on this together. And then we're going to come back here next week or the week after, and then we'll talk about it. It's just been amazing. So we're going to stop. It's 10:30. We'll be back. And then we'll continue. Thank you.